All right, everybody, I'd like to introduce our next presentation here at the Planet MicroCap Showcase Vancouver in association with Small Cap Discoveries. Up next here is Chris Dobbin from Nova Leap Health.
Thanks very much for joining. I'm going to spend the next 20 minutes just talking a little bit about Nova Leap, and then I'll spend about 5 minutes for Q&A if that works for everybody. So my name is Chris Dobbin. I'm the founder and CEO of Nova Leap Health Corp. We're a home care services business based out of Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. We have been trading on the TSX since 2016. So let me tell you just briefly in terms of how I started the company. So a number of years ago, my father-in-law was diagnosed with Parkinson's. I didn't know anything about home care at the time. He had sort of deteriorated quite a bit physically and mentally, probably over a period of a decade. And the last couple of years of his life, we had home care for two reasons. One, because he needed it, and the second reason was because my mother-in-law needed a break because it was a very, very difficult situation. So that was our family's first experience with home care. Quite honestly, I hadn't heard much about it prior to that. Didn't know how it worked, didn't know who the providers were. I would say we had a pretty good experience as a family. The one thing I would say is that as nice as the caregivers were when they came into my in-law's home, is that they really hadn't been trained to deal with somebody who had dementia. So there was a bit of a lack of skill training, which is something we noticed. So shortly after he passed away, we actually came across a home care services business for sale just outside of Halifax. We bought that business. And then we went from a family experience to providing care to about 140 families along the northern corridor of Nova Scotia. And that really opened our eyes in terms of what the need is in the market. And if you look at demographic trends, what the need exists for an aging population over at least the next 40 years. And so I founded Nova Leap back in 2016 through the CPC program. We went public, which I think was the smallest IPO in history, which was $350,000. I think we did the smallest qualifying transaction in history, which was $240,000. And so we started very, very small. You'll see that in 2016, our revenue was $40,000, and last year it was $26 million. We make money as a company. Okay, for those of you that attended Brent Todd's presentation and Paul Andreola's presentation earlier on, which I'll refer to this a little bit later on, we are a company that makes money. Okay, we are cash flow positive. We have no debt, no bank debt. We took a couple of small vendor take-back loans on some deals that we've done. And we are very much under the radar, I think, for most of the investment community. So we're one of those companies that are waiting for people to find us. And so thank you for finding us today. So that's the story of how we get started. I'm going to take you through a couple of highlights before we get into Q&A. What do we do? So we provide home care. I'll contrast that to say we do not own real estate. We're not a nursing facility, assisted living facility, or independent living facility. But we do provide one-on-one care within those types of facilities. Okay? About 80% of our business is in the U.S. We operate across 10 states in the U.S. And in the U.S., the way reimbursement works is there's Medicare and Medicaid, and that's done through the government. We are not in that space. We operate in what's called the private pay space. So generally, a caregiver goes into one of our clients' homes. We bill our client on an hourly basis. We pay our caregiver on an hourly basis. Our caregivers are employees. They're not contractors. So we're making margin on every hour, and that margin across the board is just north of 38%. Okay? So that's our gross margin. But our service ranges from activities of daily living, dementia care, which is our predominant service, light housekeeping, meal prep, transportation, errands, doctor visits, meal prep, so you name it. If there's a reason for your loved one to need care within their home or one-on-one within a facility, then we come in, we provide that. And most of our work is non-medical. Okay? So dementia care, medication reminders as an example, that's non-medical work. We do also provide some what's referred to as skilled care, which is done by nurses, so RNs predominantly. And so that could be sort of higher acuity work. So that is the nature of the business that we perform. Okay? Pretty, I think, easy to understand. The home care industry itself is growing, and it's based on demographics. Unless anybody wants me to spend time explaining that we have an aging population base, then I'm just going to keep rolling on here. We've got about 40 years of four decades of increasing aging demographics within North America. So where do we operate? So head office is in Halifax, Nova Scotia. We operate a couple offices, three other offices in Nova Scotia currently. We're in the New England area, so Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and New Hampshire. I think we've made, so Massachusetts would be our largest geographic portion of our business. We operate in Charleston, South Carolina. We're in Louisville, Kentucky, Cincinnati, Ohio. We're also in Texas, Arkansas, and Oklahoma. So we operate across 10 states in the U.S., and we operate in one province currently in Canada. We report, so when we report quarterly or our annual results, we report in U.S. dollars because the majority of our work is in U.S. dollars, both on the expense and on the revenue side. So what do we look for in acquisition? So we are an acquisitive type of company, right? People will call us a roll-up story, and that's true. But I also will go through this, so I want people to understand that we are a good operating type of business as well. We're basically a platform that buys home care services businesses and just integrates them into the platform. So very much like a private equity firm, but operating as a public entity. So most of the deals that we look at are small mom-and-pop businesses. They've been around for 10 or 15 years, operated by an owner that's looking for a succession plan or an exit. And so we'll buy the business from that owner. We're generally paying in around 5x EBITDA. These are historically profitable companies, pretty predictable. There's two types of staff. There's the office team, which is generally 3 to 4 people in the office. And then there's the caregivers that, you know, could be 50 to 75 caregivers out in the field. And that office would operate within a 30-minute radius, okay? So that's what that's the type of business we look for. Our deals are very consistent. I think we've made a number of them. The owner gets cash on closing, a vendor take back that's usually over 2 to 3 years and potentially an earnout, okay? Because we do not have any bank debt, we have access to bank debt. So as we make acquisitions, we'll do that either to cash flow or we'll go and we'll leverage up and we'll buy these businesses. We do not need equity investment. Okay? Cash flow positive, no debt, not here risen equity. Undervalued. All right, growth strategy, organic growth. So when we look to buy these companies, we're looking to obviously grow them over time in the region they operate. We may do startup locations, which we've done once. Acquisitions are predominantly that's our growth driver. So we talk about catalysts. That's typically what we're looking at doing is making a number of acquisitions in a year. Between 2017 and 2021, we made 4 per year on average, so 1 per quarter on average. Sometimes we'll do 3 in 2 weeks, but like that was our average. We paused acquisitions between 2021 and until May of this year. We'll get into financials. So on the left-hand side are the annual numbers, and the right-hand side are the quarterly numbers. So you'll see that, you know, if we go as far left as we can in this chart, back in 2017, we had $1 million of revenue, U.S., right? And the last couple of years, we've been hovering around sort of this $28 to $26 million mark. Adjusted EBITDA was virtually non-existent for the first few years. We are now consistent. We have 5 consistent quarters of EBITDA and revenue, okay? So we are at a point where we were a startup company for a number of years. We went through a very tough period for us during COVID. We've come out of that, I would consider, in excellent shape. So the last 5 quarters have been very predictable in terms of revenue and EBITDA, very consistent. So in Canadian dollars, we're averaging about $35 million of revenue on an annual basis and about $2.2 million of EBITDA, okay? And I use EBITDA as a proxy for cash flow because we have very little taxes that we pay and we have virtually no CapEx. Okay, so service-based business, CapEx light. So very, very consistent. Management team. This is on our website, so you can go to this. But Chris and I, our CFO, is here in the room. Operate the team from Halifax, and then in the U.S. we have a vice president of operations as well as three regional directors. Board of directors, there's 6 of us on there. I'm the only non-independent. We have 5 independent directors. and the insider ownership is 40% insider ownership. Okay. I own 10%, just over 10%. We have our largest shareholder, which owns just under 20, and then the rest of the directors and our CFO own 10. So 40% total insider ownership. We've got 86.2 million shares outstanding. We have a market cap today. Last I checked, I think it was $20 million. And no bank debt. So I'm gonna take you through. I took a photocopy. Did anyone go to Brent Todd's presentation this morning? There's one chart that I think was applicable to us that he put up, and it had to do with things to consider before making an investment. So the first one was the average microcap success story is a 10-year overnight sensation. I'm feeling that. Like we've been at this for at least 8 years. Nobody knows who we are. And at some point they will, and they'll say, you know, they'll call us a startup after 10 years. I believe that's what's going to happen. The second was look for those businesses that have turned a significant corner in terms of figuring out how to become profitable or on the verge of sustained profitability. One or two quarters is not enough. We have five consistent quarters. The hard time we went through was COVID. We've turned a corner. We're cash flow positive, no debt, no need for equity. So I think we meet that criteria. Three, look for a catalyst to their profitability. Ours is M&A. We're an M&A company. We buy these businesses. We integrate them in our business. And I can talk about that if anyone has any questions about how we do that. But that is our catalyst. I've been open to the market that we're back in making acquisitions. We'll make more acquisitions. And the fourth was look for businesses that can cross the magic $500,000 per quarter of net income threshold. Now, he said, don't use EBITDA, don't use adjusted EBITDA, don't use EBITDAC, and don't use EBITDAR. Those were his words. And we do use adjusted EBITDA, and I told you why we do that, because we don't have any CapEx or taxes, and it's our closest approximation to cash flow. We don't use net income because we have $500,000 foreign currency fluctuations that are non-cash. Okay, so I can't remember, last quarter we might have had a positive $500,000 foreign currency fluctuation. We did not actually exchange dollars between the two currencies, so it was just an accounting entry. So we've crossed the threshold that at least Brent would use, I believe, of the 500. We'd be at, $550 probably in that threshold. So I always enjoy going to the other conversations or the other presentations that happen here, try to think about, you know, how could someone that's been investing in the market for 25 years in the microcap space, how could he view a company like ours? And I haven't spoken to him. I've never met Brent. But and I like to kind of apply that in these presentations. So based on what I saw earlier, there's a number of criteria I think that we would meet to be attractive for investors. So I think there's two questions I always look at when I'm looking at these companies. One, do I think the management team is credible enough to take this company to the next level? Right, and that's a question that you have to ask yourselves. If the answer is no, there's no point in spending more time on it. If the answer is yes, then do I think that this company has a runway and has put itself in a position to continue to grow? Macroeconomics say, demographic trend will say this is an aging population, so easy to understand. We have a company that's cash flow positive, that's good. We have a company that doesn't have any debt, that's good. They have a history of doing acquisitions at good valuations, that's good. So there are a number of good things that I view that we've done well, but investors have to ask that question, do we think the management team can take this to the next level? We will, but people have to ask that self and satisfy themselves with the question before considering investment in our company. The type of investor we look for are long-term investors. For anyone that's read any of my CEO shareholder letters, we'll say we're not looking for hot money. We've done private placements in the past at a premium to market without warrants. Okay, we're not looking for short-term improvements in the stock price. I'm sure it'll happen at some point, but we are really looking at making a long-term sustainable enterprise here in the public markets. And I think that as people learn a little bit more about what we're doing, I think the interest will continue to sort of come in the stock. So I'll stop there and happy to take any questions you may have. Yes. Yeah, so the question is how much the operating costs, or sorry, on head office costs or the operating costs? I can't answer that specifically. What I can say is that our head office costs as a percentage of revenue are at 5%, and then we break down our operating segments and our MD&A between the Canadian segment and the U.S. segment. And the U.S. segment last quarter did 11.25% EBITDA margins, and the Canadian segment did 10.75%. But those costs are not broken out per se. Oh, liability insurance? Oh, sure. Yeah. So we have a number of types of insurance in the company. So from the top down, we have D&O insurance. We do have professional liability insurance for all the agencies, both in Canada and the U.S. We have vehicle insurance for any vehicles we own. I think we have one or two vehicles in the system. Yeah, sure. We do workers' compensation insurance is very important. So we employ, our staff are all employees. They're not contractors. And so workers' compensation insurance would be a large portion of our business as well. Yeah. Yeah, so the question is how do we protect ourselves against competition? So our belief, and this is based on experience in my own sort of family situation, is that training is very important. So one of the things that we've done is we've implemented a very specific type of dementia training with our caregivers. Most of the agencies that we've acquired, quite honestly, have not had any dementia training, yet it probably represents 75% of our market, folks that live with dementia. So we brought in dementia training. Most of the agencies we've acquired have been small, so they don't offer benefits. We do offer benefits to our employees, and so that's been helpful in making sure that we're attracting people that want to stay with the company, and we can provide an additional level of coverage that they wouldn't have. I would say it's especially, we often take for granted our healthcare system here in Canada. I'm not talking about wait lines, but I'm talking about access to universal healthcare. You don't have that in the U.S., right? And healthcare in the U.S. is extremely expensive. Most people don't have it. And so we have the ability to offer it. We have to offer it, given our size in the U.S., but we have the ability to offer it. It's a cost, but one that's well worth it for us to keep people on staff. So those are just a couple of examples. The other thing I would say is that if you look at a small individual agency, they are where they are, and they'll never be anywhere else, meaning they operate within this 30-minute radius in a location, and if you looked at the company 5 years ago and if you look at a decade from now, it'd be the same size. And it's because they just don't have the resources behind them to grow. We do, right? We have the ability to actually hire experienced people that have been involved in the industry for years that can help the agencies in a number of different areas. And our growth, our size, is actually a competitive advantage. This is hard to believe given that we're small as a public company, but as an entity in the U.S., we're actually in the top 10% of size of within the industry as an independent, non-franchised. So large franchises would be like Home Instead, Nurse Next Door, Bright Star, but we operate independent agencies, and as an independent in the U.S., we're in the top 10%, which is hard to believe. Yeah?
Why isn't there more consolidation?
So there is consolidation. It's usually private equity backed. We're the only public company we can find that's in the private pay space of the non-Medicare Medicaid side. A lot of consolidation has happened in the Medicare Medicaid space. So LHC Group, Amedisys, Addis, Pennant Group. So, and those companies, by the way, Amedisys is being taken private by an insurance company. LHC Group was taken private by an insurance company. Addis is still around, but they've typically gone after the government-paid stuff, so Medicare, Medicaid side of things. But there are some PE-backed larger players in our space, and there's some regional players. But that's who's been doing it. Yep. That's right. Oh, no, we are. So the question is, I talked about not having a debt. And so I was positioning the company to say we're in a great spot financially. But I've also told the market, we are going out to the market and we will buy more companies. And we will do that by re-leveraging up. So we will take on bank debt to buy these companies because we have so much debt capacity right now. So that is the plan. And we'll do that again with, so just by leveraging our balance sheet. Right. Yeah, so the question is, are we concerned about another pandemic and the impact on the business? COVID had an impact on the business. We also learned a lot through COVID and things that we would likely do differently in a future pandemic. Our position as a company is very different than what it was back then, too. Financially, we're in the strongest position we've ever been in. But I would say it was an education for us going through the pandemic, and there are some things that we would likely do quite differently. Yeah. Yep. Sure. Yeah, sure. So acquisition is part of the strategy. What do they look like? One is, so we find them through our direct outreach, as an example. There are brokers in the U.S. that will send us opportunities, so we'll get them that way. Or we attend industry conferences, which lead to opportunities. So, for example, I spoke at a panel at an industry conference in Nashville, 3 weeks ago or a month ago, and a couple opportunities have come from that, right? So we kind of work through those. We'll see where they land. To give an example, so the last deal we did was in Massachusetts, a really small acquisition. It was doing about $800,000 revenue, I think $100,000 EBITDA. We ended up paying 3 times. So we paid $300,000 for it, $250,000 down, $50,000 as promissory note broken up over 2 years. So in that situation, they were tech light. The scheduling software didn't actually use scheduling software, so it was, you know, done manually. We incorporated our scheduling software. Oftentimes, the caregivers have to come into the office and pick up a physical check. So we implement direct deposit. We use our accounting software that we use across the system. So we brought our technology and our infrastructure and people, to that case. But that's a small example of one of the smaller transactions that we would do. But just an example of some of the things that we work on. Yep. Yeah, so the principal vendor is leaving, so that's a succession plan, and so we replace the owner. We're not actually looking to keep any owner unless we had someone that was younger that wanted to expand through his or her geography. That would be different. That would be more like a private equity deal, but all the owners they wanted to basically retire to Florida and pay no personal state taxes, so that's what they've done. So those are the types of deals that we do. Culture is really important, so we spend quite a bit of time with the owners in just – and look, they can spin it any way they want, but we're trying to get to know them a little bit more to figure out, you know, how they treat their staff and how the duties are sort of splitting up between everybody in the office and stuff like that. We certainly have a culture that we aspire to, and so we move forward on that basis. I got one minute left, maybe 30 seconds left. Yep. Advertising? Yeah. So how do we advertise the business? How do we track new people? So two ways. One is heavy word of mouth. So past clients, physicians, rehab clinics, surgeries, surgery clinics, just like anyone that would touch somebody that could make potentially make a referral, like hospital systems as an example would be another one. So that's sort of at the local level. And that's usually done through the relationships that exist through the local office. And then online would be second. So even Google AdWords and stuff like that that are, you know, in the SEO and SEM stuff that everybody does, like that's also part of the business. So those two approaches. All right, we're going to wrap it up and get the sign. Thank you very much. Really appreciate your time.